This is 1600 AM KRVA, Cockrell Hill, Dallas.
Cảm ơn quý vị vẫn giữ làn sóng của Sài Gòn Đà Lạt 1600 AM. Và bây giờ thì chúng tôi xin được mời quý vị cùng đến với chương trình Máy Dầm Sơn Khê qua phần phụ trách của anh Phan Quang Trọng. Và chúng tôi được biết là ngày hôm nay anh sẽ có được một cuộc phỏng vấn rất là đặc biệt với một người cũng rất là đặc biệt. Thôi để dành cái sự đặc biệt đó cho anh Phan Quang Trọng bật mí cho quý vị nha thưa quý vị. Trên đường đặc biệt của chúng tôi có sự hiện diện của hai vị, một vị rất là quen thuộc, đó là anh Phan Quang Trọng. Đầu tiên Hoàn Tính xin được chào anh Phan Quang Trọng, mời anh lên tiếng trước ạ.
Vâng, chào anh Hoàn Tính.
Dạ vâng.
Và xin kính chào quý thính giả của đài Sài Gòn Dallas và chương trình Máy Dầm Sơn Khê ạ.
Happy July 4, mừng ngày lễ độc lập đến với anh. Và ngày hôm nay anh có khỏe không anh?
Cảm ơn anh Hoàn Tính, rất là khỏe. Hôm qua là đi ra ngoài sinh hoạt, trời nóng nhưng mà trời đẹp tuy hơi nóng thưa anh.
Dạ vâng. Ngày hôm nay anh có thể anh bật mí cho quý vị bà con đồng hương biết cái chương trình của chúng ta thực hiện với một cuộc phỏng vấn với một nhân vật nào không nè. Mời anh nè.
Vâng, cảm ơn anh Hoàng Tín. Và kính thưa quý vị, hôm nay chúng tôi có cái dịp phỏng vấn một người trẻ rất là thành công sống trong tiểu bang Texas, đó là cô Jennifer Châu. Thưa quý vị, cô Jennifer Châu là cái người sinh trưởng và lớn lên tại Hoa Kỳ. Và cô ta là một trong những người Việt, người Mỹ gốc Việt đầu tiên được bầu vào cái chức gọi là County Attorney, một cái county tên là Matagorda, chính tiểu bang Texas. Và thưa quý vị, như quý vị cũng biết là chương trình Máy Dầm Sơn Khê của chúng tôi luôn luôn tìm những người trẻ như thế này để chúng ta học hỏi về họ và để chia sẻ những cái kinh nghiệm của họ cho những người trẻ khác muốn sinh hoạt trong chính trị dòng chính. Hello, Jennifer. Are you there?
Yes. Hello. Good morning, Dr. Trọng và khán giả của Saigon Radio, Dallas, Fort Worth. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Oh, thank you. And thưa quý vị, cô Jennifer Châu, giống như chúng tôi nói là cô ta lớn lên ở tại Hoa Kỳ, ra trường high school là khoảng năm 2000. Thành thử ra cô ta nói và cảm thấy comfortable khi mà nói tiếng Anh, thành thử ra chúng tôi sẽ dành cái cuộc phỏng vấn này bằng tiếng Anh. Is that okay with you, Jennifer? You can speak in English,
yes,
and
of course.
If you feel comfortable to speak in Vietnamese as of your
yes,
choice.
Yes, I think. Thank you so,
so how,
much.
How are you today?
I am good. I am. Today is a county holiday, so I am just working from home today.
Oh, working from home. So can we talk a little bit about your childhood, because your childhood is very typical Vietnamese American who grew up here in the state, and your experience might, you know, mirror a lot of Vietnamese Americans. So was you born here in the state of Texas?
So I actually was born in Oklahoma City, and we didn't move to the Texas area until I was probably 2 or 3.
Oh, so, and then you basically went to elementary school and high school in Palacios, Texas?
That's correct. I attended all of my school here in Palacios and went to college thereafter in different universities.
Yes, okay. And then looking at your bio, I thought that you graduate from having a bachelor's degree at a very, very young age, 19 years old. 19 years old, I'm still in high school, and you already have a bachelor's degree. It is amazing.
Thank
and,
you.
And how, why did you decide to go to law school after that?
Well, you know, there's one thing that I was always inspired by growing up, and that was my parents. My dad was the first male magistrate of the state of Texas, which I know you had the pleasure of having on your show a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And he was such a big influence on my life. And my mother also always told me, you know, to follow what I love. But primarily, one of the things that we don't talk about as the Vietnamese people is some of the traumatic experiences that we have. And for me, when I was little, I was a victim of sexual assault when I was 8 years old. And that really, really changed the course, I think, of a lot of the way of how I lived my life, as well as what I decided I wanted to do. And now, as an older woman, every day in my job, I find a lot of direction, I guess you would say, direction and comfort, knowing that I can assist and help with other people, other women, children who are victims of sexual assault, of regular assault, of battered women. So I like to be that advocate for people who really don't have a voice to be able to speak up.
Oh, that's amazing, especially in our communities where this kind of misconduct is being silenced, you know, to
that's
protect
correct.
The family
that's
name right. or whatever. I appreciate that you speak about it openly. But I know that you
Thank
went
you.
To law school in Michigan. And then when
that's
you graduated,
correct.
You decided to come back to the Gulf State. Why? I mean, going back to your where you went to high school and instead of practice in the north of America.
There was never a question that I would come back to Texas.
Oh, really?
I always
That's great.
Knew that I yes, Texas is a wonderful place for me. It shaped a lot of how I grew up. And of course my family was here, and being close to family was always so important for me. So I first moved back to Houston to start practicing because I wanted to be in the big city and live the big city life. And I realized after a few years of practice that all of my clients were here in Palacios. And I opened up a second office, but I was driving maybe 3 times a week back and forth. And I was just so tired of the drive, so I decided to move back to Palacios.
Oh, I know, thưa quý vị, thành phố Palacios cách Houston khoảng 80 miles. That's a long stretch if you drive every day. And
it is
you form your law. Yes, go ahead.
Oh no, I'm
it
sorry. I was
drive.
Just saying that it was long. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know when you file a law firm and you decide to practice in Palacios, as we know that the town is small, but there's a lot of oil refinery, right? You even have a nuclear power plant there, and also. So the majority of your the people you represent is from fishing business.
That's correct. My firm in Palacios currently takes care of about over 250 corporations. So I practice a lot of business law and real estate law.
Oh, that's a lot of work. So a few years ago, I know there's a couple of lawsuits against. The oil spill in the area, right, that damaged a lot of fishing business. Are you involved in this kind of litigation?
I was. So I was so fortunate. When I graduated from school and I took the bar, but technically we didn't get the results until May of 2010. The BP oil spill happened in April of 2010. So it happened a month before I was licensed to practice law. But a lot of people in our area did not get lawyers. And so by the time that I was became a lawyer, there were a lot of people who were Vietnamese in this area and other people just in our area that wanted me to counsel them. So my very first case out of the gate was a very large BP oil spill.
Wow, it's a huge case. And it's kind of remind me of what's going on in Vietnam with there's a lot of big corporation form some kind of refinery along the fishing village in central Vietnam, like Formosa. And this company have, a part of their products, they produce a lot of nuclear waste or whatever waste involved in the process. and they released it right into the sea. And it damaged the fishing business big time. But the government didn't really support the normal citizen to form a litigation against this big corporation. So the struggle is still going on. I don't know if you have that kind of experience here in the state of Texas.
You know, we're very fortunate that here in the United States, the justice system gives us the opportunity, and anyone the opportunity, to sue not only on behalf of ourselves, but for our environment. So whenever we see waste or what we call toxic torts, basically when there is something that is harming our environment, we as an individual can bring a lawsuit in court against that, the person who's doing that harm, and represent our environment, represent the fish and our land, and basically things that are getting poisoned by those, by the toxic waste that is being released.
Mm-hmm. Thưa quý vị, như lúc đầu chúng tôi giới thiệu, cô Jennifer Châu là một người Việt, người Mỹ gốc Việt đầu tiên tại tiểu bang Texas được bầu là một county attorney. Miss Châu, I'm talking about you are the first elected Vietnamese American county attorney in the state of Texas. This is quite an interesting fact. And why did you choose to participate in the public service after all?
Thank you. A few years ago, I was looking around me and I saw that there was a lack of representation of Vietnamese Americans mm-hmm. in my local government. I did what I think a lot of Americans do, is we just wait and we wait for somebody else to do it. So I thought to myself, why aren't you doing it then? If you're looking around and you don't see the change that you want to see, then be the change. And mm-hmm. so I started looking at my county, at what different offices were available. And this particular office, and, you know, in the state of Texas, the county attorney varies in different counties. But for my county, I oversee the Child Protective Services docket. I help file protective orders for abused women and children. And I also advise the county commissioners on civil law. So mm-hmm. I thought that this was really an office that would play to the strengths of my practice, as well as be the fulfillment that I was looking for in public service.
Wow, that's inspiration. But you talk about the Vietnamese or even the Asian underrepresented in the public service sector. But look, we only have from your county, I read the 2010 census data, we only have 3% Asian American in that county, and majority are white American, 67%. So mm-hmm. as a minority in that kind of demographic, and getting to public service is not an easy thing. So number one, congratulations on you choosing to join the public service, because I know there's no wealth or monetary reward in public service, as you well know from your father. But I guess that because, like you said, you feel the drive of represent the Vietnamese or an Asian American, right?
Yes, I do. I wanted to represent not only Vietnamese people, but a minority. I am a minority. I'm a person of color. And I wanted to give a voice. I wanted diversity. And I wanted mm-hmm. what I call a seat at the table, which is something we say when we want to make change for our county or our local community. If we want to participate, then we must have a voice there. And so I wanted to be a part of that decision-making process.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about the Matagorda County. Did I pronounce the county names right?
Perfect.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. So Matagorda is one of the counties along the Texas Gulf area. I know compared with big city, you have a little bit smaller population, but I bet that the challenge in public service, especially in legal system, is quite the same, you know. And tell us a little bit about this county, and a little bit about the county attorney role as yourself.
Sure. So our county is a small county, like you said. Overall, I think our population is 30,000, a little over 30,000, according to the last census. And we have a racial makeup of white, African American, Asian, and Hispanic or Latino. I talk about Matagorda County, but our county seat is Bay City, which is about 30 minutes from Palacios. I grew up in Palacios, which our demographic of Vietnamese people or Asian people is higher in Palacios than it is everywhere else in the county. And that's because Palacios has a unique experience that we have our port city. So we have a very large shrimping industry here, which the Vietnamese people, when they immigrated to the United States, really became instrumental and integral part of the shrimping industry here in the United States. So there was no question that they were settling among these Gulf cities to continue their craft and their skills in shrimping. Matagorda itself has just an amazing agricultural background. We farm rice here because of our location to the river. We not only are one of the biggest shrimping ports of Texas, but we also have the largest shrimp farm in Texas. We have over 95% of farmed redfish in the United States. So we are really the leading county in aquaculture in all of the state of Texas as well as the United States. So I'm very proud to be a part of my county that has such diverse, different, backgrounds and opportunities economically. For me, in the county attorney position, what our office does is we ensure that we are advising our county commissioners correctly when they take care of county business. And when you think of county business, it really is all-encompassing. It's not just about the roads and the bridges that you travel on. Mm-hmm. It's things like animal control, nuisance cases. So, like, if your neighbor does not have their septic system right and is dumping out, human waste inappropriately, the county would issue violations and my office would take care of it. So my office has a very large duty to the county to enforce and to litigate these cases so that we continue to make the community a good place for us to be in.
Right. So, this year and last year is nothing typical about, American life. And I'm pretty sure it's also in your particular role in the city. But how did the city deal with, the pandemic and the other challenges that facing the United States at large?
One of the best things about being in a small county is the fact that we have a lot of great leaders, and mm-hmm. we have a good network. So when we can get information out, we're talking about 30,000 as opposed to Harris County, which holds Houston. We're only like 1/20th of their size. I can't imagine trying to get information to millions of people. Here mm-hmm. in our county, our elected officials, our leaders in our community, we're really good about getting information out about the pandemic. we work together as a community to ensure that, just for instance, one of the first things when the pandemic hit was school children were going to be, you know, people were afraid that school children did not have access to food, to lunch, because they were no longer going to school. Right. And because our county is so rich in agriculture, we made sure that we had access to food. There were a lot of food drives. We gave out a lot of food. We gave out water. And we made sure that people had information. We put it out on Facebook. And this was all before I was elected. The majority of the pandemic happened last year. So I'm just coming in this year on the tail end. So particularly this year, I assisted with like the immunizations and the vaccine to make sure that we were getting that information out.
Right. You know, when I was in Bar Sales last time, I have a chance to speak to quite a bit of people, especially the Vietnamese American there, and I know the people are very happy with the public office there. But as you know, that I myself as the one former public servant, I worked for the Department of Defense for 33 years. And one of the things that I found a lot of challenges in is you have to serve everyone. For example, you know, a certain computer product can have a piece of logo and serving their selected customer. But for public service, you are bound by the values of equality, fairness, representation, like you mentioned. So the government, your customer is everyone. I know that you're new to the office, but do you think it is one of the challenges that you currently face at the county?
Yes, I do face this every day. And I think every public official, whether you're a minority or not, faces the challenges of public office. You really, you know, if you can't please everyone, and if you go in with the mindset that you have to please everyone, I think that that's ultimately what leads to your, you know, self-criticism, self-anxiety that comes with that. I think that one of the best piece of advice that I ever had coming into public service was you just try to do good every day, and you can try to make the best decision at that time with the information that you have. And if you go in with the mindset that you're just trying to do the best you can every day for the greatest amount of people, then your service will always reflect that.
Right. And I really appreciate you sharing that to the young listener out there who aspiring to join the public service sector. But another lesson I learned from your father when I spoke with him, he's always said that there's no task that's too small, right, for an elected official and for anyone who participates in the community service. But another thing that I found challenging, and especially in the big city, is public sector employees are disliked because people, when they come to public service, is usually they're in some kind of trouble, and they're looking for the efficiencies and the effectiveness and they think that they pay tax, so they demand a lot from public service. I don't know, did you feel that way?
Yes, I do. And my office usually fields the complaints on the county level for the public, and it should. We should have a way for the public to criticize us, because if we don't have public input, if people do not tell us or bring attention to things that we need to pay attention to, how is it that we can build a community to improve upon the issues in the county? And there's always a scale of issues, right? So there may be something small, like, oh, there's a pothole in this road. Can you fix it? Or it may be something big, like, oh, you know, there is an emergency situation. So we always have to be open as public servants to listen to criticism, listen to the community, because there's no way that a small amount of us can know everything that's going on.
Right. You know, this last year and this year, I think is changing our life, changing the way we look at the world. And I'm pretty sure in public service, we're facing that too. Because most citizens don't know what they don't know. You know, Americans like us, we know more about a TV show than we know about our own local and state governments. And citizens want government there during emergency, but they don't want to support the training, the infrastructure necessary to ensure readiness. So I know, especially now in a small city or small county with limited resources, you're facing that public education in a term that how do you communicate with the people about your government, about your role, about what you can provide, and ask them for their support. You see that challenge?
You're exactly right. You know, one of the things that people just are uneducated about is how local government actually works. You know, when you have a problem with your ditch in front of your home, you think that that's the city, but it actually may be the county, or it actually may be the drainage district. So you have to know what government entity has authority over the particular issue that you're facing. And you may be going to, you know, the county or the city and complaining about it when it really is the drainage ditch committee that you need to talk to. So it's so important to educate ourselves and our community about the different roles that local government offices as well as local combined government entities do for your community. One of the best things about the pandemic or just recent technology is social media. And I say this with a grain of salt because I know the harm that social media can do. But
right.
I think that because it's so accessible, it has been really a blessing of free marketing, a free way for my office. When I want to make an announcement, for instance, during the freeze that happened earlier this year in February, well, we were able to get on to Facebook and tell everybody our offices are closed, or send out alerts about, you know, the county offices. Nobody was able to access it because of the ice on the roads, or we were able to work from home in an emergency situation and get numbers out so people could still call us and contact us. So I am thankful for social media that there is a way to quickly get out that information, and it's so quickly shared. But it is, at the end of the day, I think something that we still need to work on is how to get our community more involved with local government or being involved with our community in general. It's so amazing to me when I see something like a fundraiser or some sort of charitable organization doing something and people go out and they support it. But I think about, you know, how if we had that same mindset for our local government, that not only information could be spread quickly, but we can really organize and get people involved to better the community in its entirety. It's not just about charity. It's about helping your fellow community person get through the worst times, you know, making that connection.
I totally agree with you. And I as a community leader in South Texas myself, I found that also, and it's one of the challenges that in our communities. I mean, we need to support the people who sacrifice their time, their career in public service, and it's one way to support them is going out there, support your time, support your finance. You are so fortunate that you grew up with a great man. Mr. Ling Zhou is the mayor of Palacios, and you learn a lot from them. And probably because of him, that you decide to join public service. But what is your advice to Vietnamese American youth out there who want to follow your father's footsteps and starting to follow your footsteps?
So I think that the biggest misconception about public service is that it takes someone amazing or great, or that you must be exemplary to be a good community member. And it's not. The best thing to be a public servant is just trying to make the best decision for your community and do the best good in the amount of time that you have here. It is just little small acts of kindness, acts of good, acts of consideration that really propel you to be the community leader that you want to be. You know, every time someone asks me, you know, how do you find the strength, or how do you deal with these things? And really, at the end of the day, you just take one issue at a time, you put one foot in front of the other, and that all things are possible if you just continue to have the persistence to do the good things, try and make the good decisions. And, you know, setbacks, obstacles, they're always going to be there for everybody. But you just have to keep your goal in mind to take one small step every day to make a good decision. And that's how you can succeed in public service.
Wow. I'm so glad that you share that thought. And I wish that you always have that good heart in the long career, bright career ahead of you. And it will set you aside from being a politician or being a leader. And this path will make you become a leader and a good leader. So, Jennifer, có muốn nói cái gì trong tiếng Việt không? Trước khi chúng ta chia tay ngày hôm nay, before we part, would you like to share something in Vietnamese?
Yes, of course. Jennifer, muốn cảm ơn cho Radio Saigon Dallas với Dr. Chow, với cho Jennifer cơ hội để nói hôm nay với khán giả về cái đời của Jennifer với cái việc làm của Jennifer. Tại vì Jennifer tính là cái quan trọng nhất trong đời là cái cơ hội của người Việt Nam mình có ở đây ở nước Mỹ, là cơ hội ở đây là quá cao, giống như mình có hết tất cả cái cơ hội ở đây. Thì nếu mình có cơ hội thì tại sao người mình Việt Nam mình không có cái, mình cũng có kêu bằng cái ability, giống như cái mình là thông minh và khả năng để đi cái bước đầu tiên, hay là đi bước sau người ta, là cũng y chang là make a difference, để giống như làm tốt nhất cho cái community của mình. Thì Jennifer muốn cảm ơn là quá Jennifer là thankful, là so giống như muốn cảm ơn tất cả để cho Jennifer cái cơ hội để nói chuyện hôm nay.
Thank you very much. And you speak Vietnamese, I think, better than me. So,
hopefully,
I'm speaking Vietnamese. Anyway, thank you very much. And hopefully that we'll see you more on radio or even on television. Và kính thưa quý vị, vừa rồi chúng tôi được nói chuyện với cô Jennifer Châu. Cô ta là Matagorda County Attorney, một người phụ nữ đầu tiên được bầu vào chức vụ đó tại tiểu bang Texas. And once again, thank you, Jennifer. Good luck with your career and looking forward to talk to you more. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Lòng gió